The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
One of the things I did identify with Claire Mix about there is I love one of those selection box size double deckers. Now, they're not miniature, they're kind of slightly truncated, and I'm going to have one of them when I go home, which I'd imagine my next guest will disagree with. Niall Moyna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
So Niall, Joe Biden sworn in on Wednesday, 78. He'll be the oldest incoming president in US history. And of course, you have a huge interest in the topic of aging well and everything as professor of the School of Health and Human Performance in DCU. Before we talk about aging well and what we can do about that, Joe Biden, so 78, which, you know, here would be regarded as someone heading into like elderly, but clearly his age didn't go against him in winning the election.
No, well, obviously 80 million people liked him, so I think we're all pretty happy that he's going to be the new incumbent. Look, you know, aging is something, it's the issue is there's a recent song written and a line in the song is, I paraphrase it, is, what would you be if you didn't know the age you were born? And or what would you be if you didn't know the date you were born? Would I change that? What age would you be if you didn't know the day you were born? And it comes to this chronological versus biological. We put, all of a sudden, you started this section by saying, well, he's in his 80s, so therefore he's an old man. And that's the Western perception, where in fact, biologically, he's probably 60.
Yeah. And we know a bit about his health info and stuff and his history and medications and stuff, don't we? And his regime.
Yeah, look, he has been a regular exerciser all of his life. He has a rigorous program, even at 78 years of age. He does a combination of aerobic work. He seems to like rowing, cycling. He plays golf and he does weights 5 days a week. He has made the time to put that into his routine. And it probably has gone a long way to giving him the vitality that he has at a chronological age of 78.
Yeah, and it's funny you mention about the mindset there as well, though. Like, okay, Michael D, our actual president, is I think older than Joe Biden. But say the equivalent job here that Joe Biden has would be Taoiseach. And in a way, you couldn't see us having a 78-year-old Taoiseach. But is there a different mindset in the States and does that mindset kind of keep people younger and more vital?
No, I don't think it's the mindset. I think it's the persona that the president-elect protruded throughout the whole campaign. Like, he was vigorous. He was alive.
Yeah.
I mean, and Trump is younger than him. You know, actually, to look at President Trump, he actually looks, you know, to a lower level of poor health compared to Joe Biden. You know, and obviously the night that he won the election, he bounced onto the stage to try again and, you know, portray this image of someone who's very, very healthy and vital. But isn't it wonderful to see someone who's almost 80 years of age having that vitality?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, you could look at one 80-year-old and you think there's a frail old person. But some older people have a great old buzz off them like Biden, don't they? Like, it's vital, as you say.
Brendan, I've seen 60-year-olds who are overweight, inactive, heavy drinkers, diabetic, and they're biologically 80, and they think like an 80-year-old. They're chronically medicated, so you know a lot of this is in the mind, and we have control. I mean, if you take a look, I mean, the big issue we have here is if you take a look at our current healthcare system. I mean, our healthcare system is designed primarily around the diagnosis and treatment of acute illness, and we know that. And the whole idea is to prolong life for as long as possible. And more often than not, the years gained are actually the diminished quality. And people are medicated for chronic conditions and pain. Medications are increased year after year. You get side effects of the drugs and that even gives more pills. And we're in this vicious cycle. And we don't necessarily have to be in that. And we're treating primarily, like, the vast majority of our disability and death is due to chronic diseases that start very early in life. And lifestyle, not medication, can play an enormous role in delaying the onset of those diseases.
Yeah, you talk about that. What we should be looking for is health span, not lifespan.
Correct. Because in an ideal world, you know, if you asked us, we would like to live as long as possible, as healthy as possible. And we would like to get ill maybe a week before we died and compress all our illness into the last week and then we're gone. Mm. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people in Ireland will spend the last probably 30 years of their life in a state of ill health. And that's going to get younger and younger based on the current trends. So the issue is it lifespan? How much of that lifespan do we want to be healthy?
Yeah. You know, and what you're saying is the healthcare system deals with sickness, but that actually, to use a word that's been kind of devalued in fairness, but that the concern should be with wellness instead, basically.
You hit the nail on the head. And we have to integrate. That's the key. We have to create health promotion into our traditional disease management structure. I think, and we don't do that. There has to be a shift in focus. We really need a paradigm shift to reconnect medicine to public health services and integrate prevention into management and delivery of care. Prevention is enough. For example, the OECD, and we'd be pretty similar to them, we're one of the countries of the OECD, 3% of our healthcare budget is spent on prevention. It's spent, you get sick, and then you access our healthcare system. Yeah. And again, we're accessing our healthcare system primarily for lifestyle-mediated conditions due to excess alcohol consumption, poor diet, inactivity, smoking, things that we have control over.
Okay, so let's get into some specifics. So in terms of looking older, can we combat that with just, we'll start from the outside in, right? Can we combat looking older with diet and lifestyle and exercise and stuff?
Obviously, we know that a good diet, access to sunlight will maintain skin. Skin will age. Obviously, we can undergo surgical interventions, or you know, we can't arrest aging. We're all genetically programmed to age, and aging really starts after around the age of 30. We see it, you know, it's much more rapid than prior to 30, particularly for most of our organ systems, and that includes our skin. So our skin is going to age, but like our muscles, we can maintain good skin by getting with good nutrition and sunlight.
Okay, now muscles. Then you're big on this because, like, I think a lot of people, we do loads of aerobic exercise and everything, and you know, if people aren't into weights and the gym and stuff like that, they can tend to kind of be a bit afraid of it. But like, there's no avoiding it. You say we have to do it as we get older, yeah.
Well, I can't emphasize this point enough, because after 30, we do start. We're genetically programmed to lose muscle. Now, the rate at which we lose it can be mitigated tremendously by undertaking some form of resistance training. Now, compare a young woman to a male at 30 years of age. The young woman will not have the same muscle mass as the man at 30 because they don't have the same level of testosterone. So they won't accrue the same level of muscle. So they're actually starting from a lower base, which means that they could potentially reach frailty if they live long enough, much earlier than the male. So it's actually even more important for women to do weight bearing or some form of resistance training to maintain muscle mass. And obviously it's very important because once we become frail, obviously we lose our functional independence, and that's not what anyone wants.
Yeah. So in terms of simple things that people could do at home or whatever, obviously the gyms aren't open now, but for somebody who doesn't do this kind of thing, and they can look for stuff online, like, but what would you recommend? A bit of light weights, or should they be doing
you're
planking?
You're standing
or
at the cooker.
Yeah.
Lift your hands in the air and just go down and do a few squats. Something as simple as that.
Okay.
When you're on the stairs, stand on your toes and do some calf raises for your calves.
Tell us how to do a calf raise.
So you stand on the stairs on the edge of the step with on your toes, and just let your heels fall back and up and down, up and down.
Okay.
Standing against the wall, standing against the door, pushing back and forward against the door. That's upper body, wonderful exercise. So there are lots of simple exercises we can incorporate into our daily life. And probably the best one is a push-up, because it probably involves the vast majority of the major muscle groups.
So if you did nothing else, learn how to do a push-up. And I suppose we start with three and maybe add one every day kind of thing, yeah?
Well, amazingly, when we compare women to men, women under the normal, if we look at the current tests that we do, women actually do it on their knees, because the vast majority of women don't have the functional strength to do one normal push-up. So I would, my challenge would be to every female listening here, the end of this year, set yourself the target of being able to do 5 to 10 normal push-ups. And if you have that functional strength, that's telling me you have good muscle mass.
Okay, you can tell I don't do push-ups anyway, that I thought, oh yeah, we'll start with three. But I didn't realize more. I thought it was just me couldn't do one. Listen, you talk as well about that, obviously central to all this, maintaining cognitive function and what you call functional capacity. Explain to us about that.
Well, you know, as we age, obviously we're going to get exposed to illnesses at a more frequent rate than we did when we were younger, and we all realize that. And it's how we respond to that. And there's a certain functional capacity that we all should have. So, for example, if I took you into the lab and I measured your, how much oxygen you were consuming, just sitting on your chair right now. So we refer to that as one MET. That's your resting oxygen consumption. At maximal exercise, just to perform activities of daily living, walking up and down the stairs, going to the bathroom, that requires us to consume oxygen at around 4.5 times our resting level. So we refer to that as the frailty threshold. Well, the higher you are above that, say, for example, I can consume oxygen at 10 times my resting level, you know, at maximal exercise. That means I can exercise at 10 times my resting level. Now I have a big functional reserve. But once that functional reserve decreases, we find it much, much more difficult to perform activities of daily living and to respond to the acute and chronic stressors that we have in our life. For example, if you go for surgery, it takes much, much longer to recover if we have a low functional capacity.
Okay, okay. And the other thing is, this is what's going to keep us independent and keep us living in our own homes as we get older. And I think if we, one thing we've all decided after this is that everybody wants to try and die in their own homes if they can and stay independent as long as possible. Listen, is a lot of this, is it down to genes? Like, that would be an excuse a lot of us would kind of use. Ah, it's me genes, I can't do anything about it.
Look, there is certainly a genetic component to it. But, you know, one of the examples I can give, you know, there's a gene that's responsible that predisposes you to becoming obese. But research clearly shows that if you are physically active, that gene is actually switched off. So we can repress many of these genes. So, you know, for many people, that can be a cop-out. Now, there are conditions, you know, don't get me wrong, that there is a large genetic component. But the vast majority, the type 2 diabetes, you know, the premature type 2 diabetes, the development of hypertension and obesity, for the most part, that's due to individual lifestyle choices and other genes.
Okay. And part of this then, which we haven't mentioned yet, is obviously diet. You're a big advocate of a kind of Mediterranean style diet for this, yeah?
Well, you know, I wouldn't like to put myself up there as the paragon of how to eat healthy. Okay. If you saw my diet over Christmas now, you know, I was intermittent fasting, but it was about 20 minutes between one bar of chocolate and the next. You know?
Yeah.
I'm a human like everyone else, but I do try to eat healthy, you know, not eat processed food and certainly not to eat fast food. Now, I have been seen in fast food outlets, but maybe that's 3 or 4 times a year because, again, I'm human and we can all relapse. But I think we have to make a bigger effort to consume natural foods. I think the evidence now is clearly indicating it's the consumption of processed foods is what really is causing a lot of the metabolic problems that we have in society.
Okay, so you don't have to go on some kind of crazy diet or anything or limit too much, but if you just try and eat real food most of the time and limit the food-like substances to now and again. Do you take any supplements, Niall?
No, I'm not. And most of the studies would indicate that supplements are not effective. Now, maybe in Ireland, because we don't get a lot of sunlight in the wintertime, people may take vitamin D, but there is natural sources for these vitamins. So again, I'm not a proponent of supplements at all. And they just do not, they're not shown to be effective.
Really? Okay. That could save a lot of people a lot of money. Tell me about these biohackers then, who I think were into kind of, was it Yates was into the monkey glands? That these are people who are trying various things, techie people and that kind of thing, to live as long as possible. What kind of stuff do they do?
Well, I think, you know, obviously there has been a revolution in molecular biology and in our understanding of the genes and what makes us, what turns us on and turns us off. And there are a number, you know, and I think, you know, 25 years ago, you know, we were promised that we were going to solve every congenital disease in the world and they'd all be solved, and we're a long way from it. So I think it's promising a lot more than it can deliver. But there have been tremendous advances in the last 10 to 15 years. For example, there's something now we've identified as our epigenetic clock. And this clock, really, you can take a simple blood sample or a saliva sample, and that can tell you your biological age. And we know that we age biologically before our diseases manifest. So that's one big change. The other thing, they've identified something called the cellular senescence. These cells that when they switch on, they program us to become old. And they found a way to switch these cells off in animals. Now, I should say this is in animals. And then the third big thing is the mitochondria. These are the little powerhouses in our cell that provide us with energy. And it seems as we age, there's a progressive decline in the function of these small little powerhouses in our cell. And again, exercise is a wonderful way to mitigate that loss. But I think they're the three big things, looking at epigenetics, these cellular senescent cells, and mitochondria. If we can figure ways to reverse, particularly the inability of the mitochondria to produce energy, I think that would be phenomenal. But there will be, look, in 50 years' time, we look back and today and we just say we were in the dark ages, because there will be phenomenal advances, but I can't see it in our lifetime.
Niall, you need to be more ambitious here. Remember, like we thought it was going to take 10 years for a vaccine. When science puts its mind to it and we get the red tape out of the way, look at what we can do in a year. So maybe they put their minds to the aging.
Brendan, I think in my scenario, I want to live as long as I can, but I only want to be sick for the last week. That's my ideal scenario.
Yeah. Niall, okay, a lot of people looking for little regimes and everything else here, but what would be the one takeaway people could take away with them today? One simple thing that they could determine to do differently every day, some small habit.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Do it. It doesn't matter how hard it is or how long you go, but just do something and do it consistently.
Okay.
That's the key. It's the consistency. If we're not consistent, it's no good. You know, so it's, and don't try and do your resolution or do something you know you can't sustain for the rest of the year. So if it means that every night at 7 o'clock, you walk 5 minutes from your front door or 7 minutes and 7 minutes back, you know, 14, 15 minute walk a day, that would be fantastic. And then come back and do 10 push-ups and 10 squats. That's a lot more than the vast majority of people are doing. And that would have significant health benefits. And the message here is you don't have to go to a gym. You don't have to kill yourself, but just be consistent.
OK, listen, before you go, a texter here saying, could you clarify about vitamin D tablets not working? The whole country is buying them at the moment. That needs clarity. But you're saying vitamin D is possibly the only one thing that we might consider taking. Yeah,
correct. Like vitamin E and vitamin C, you get those in natural produce. But yes, vitamin D, yes. And particularly for those who don't get sunlight, I would recommend that.
Okay.
But again, I would have the physician, you know, rather than someone going to the store and buying it, chat to your physician or your nutritionist and get some professional advice before you would do it on your own. Because, you know, I just think a lot of people are spending money and it's just that they're what they're doing is they're manufacturing expensive urine.
Okay. Listen, you know what we might do the next time is we might just get you on and just leave it to the texters, because it's we could be here all day again. People with actually great questions for you. But look, we'll do that another day, okay? Thanks a million, Niall Moynagh.